The FAA's call to action. Is it missing the most obvious shortcoming in pilot training? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. Being Monday, it's Bob Miller time. Bob is a CFI and publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. We have Bob on Mondays to talk about, to start our week with some safety discussions that we hope will inspire you during the week to think about these things. Bob, welcome, and thanks for taking some time out.
It's my pleasure, as always, Paul.
Bob, one of the big topics in Over the Airwaves for February is going to be this FAA call to action that was issued on Monday of last week. And I just want to read a little bit about it and then a couple of responses before we get started, and then I'll turn it over to you for your comments. The FAA is going to publish an advanced NPRM this week as part of its call to action to enhance airline safety. The FAA is asking for recommendations to improve pilot qualification and training requirements. Randy Babbitt said, and this is part of his statement, quote, "The report lays out our initial reactions to improve and revise pilot training and to develop an effective pilot fatigue rule. We also share what we have done to begin what must be an ongoing dialogue with airlines and unions to strengthen professionalism in the aviation industry and create mentoring programs for our nation's pilots. This report is a snapshot of our work, which is by no means finished. We will continue to aggressively push forward with these initiatives that we believe will raise the safety bar even higher," unquote. A couple of other reactions from around the industry. The Coalition of Airline Pilots Associations is criticizing the FAA for going 30 years since the Air Florida crash without doing anything about anti-ice and de-icing training. 20 years after the NTSB placed pilot fatigue on its most wanted list, nothing's been done. And now they're calling out Randy Babbitt for again postponing release of the NPRM on fatigue that was originally promised prior to the end of 2009. And he made that promise back during his Meet the Administrator session at EAA Air Venture Oshkosh last summer. The Airline Pilots Association, President Captain John Prater, says the conclusion of simple pilot error in the NTSB report ignores the multitude of contributing factors. And Colgan Air says, by all accounts, Captain Renslow and First Officer Shaw were fine people, but they knew what to do in the situation they faced that night a year ago, had repeatedly demonstrated they knew what to do, and yet did not do it. We cannot speculate on why. And that leads us up to you're taking this issue on and over the airwaves and talking about the fact that too many of us don't get even the most basic stall training. We go up to the edge of it. We listen to the stall horn blow and then try to recover from it before we ever really break it. And you put out a survey to your readers, and it had some very interesting results. Why don't you go into that for our listeners?
Well, Paul, you know, the criticism of Captain Renslow and First Officer Shaw in the regional airlines, you know, I'm of the belief that they are not culpable. I don't believe they were the problem. I believe the problem started way back in the primary pilot training level. I don't believe that Renslow or Shaw had the requisite stall warning, stall training, stall recovery training that would have been a solution in the problem that they faced on Continental 3407. I did a survey of our readers in Over the Airwaves, and now we have just a little over 1,500 responses. And these are pilots from all over the world, all different backgrounds, and I ask the simple question, during your primary pilot training, your instructor taught you to recover from a power-off stall, and I offered five different options. The first option was at the first indication of pending stall with a stall horn. The second option was after the airplane began to show some stall flutter. The third option was after the complete stall break. The fourth option was we did not perform power off stalls at all. And much to my surprise, almost 20% of all of the pilots surveyed, this is over 1,500 respondents, said that they never were taught to do a stall to a full stall break. Now, I also checked with the FAA. I filed a formal letter with our local FISDO to ask for an FAA definition of stall that was required in the private pilot practical test standards, and they affirmed in writing that the stall really is a full stall break. That is the standard. That's the standard to which pilots ought to be taught, and that is the standard to which they are to be tested. When I surveyed and asked how many pilots, when they went for their private pilot check ride, were asked to demonstrate a full stall break and recover. Less than 47%, some 47% of the pilots surveyed said that their examiner never took them to the full stall break. Therein, Paul, lies the problem. The problem is Johnny can't read. Johnny is supposed to learn to read in the third and fourth grade. That's equivalent to private pilot training, and it's not being done. It hasn't been done. It's not being done. And to my belief, this is where the real problem begins. It's the fact that we're simply not training pilots to recover from a full stall, so that when they get to the regional level, regional airline level, they haven't been trained to do it. They couldn't do it. And when the airplane reached a stall speed and entered a stall, they had no idea as to how to implement a proper recovery procedure.
All right, Bob, when we come back from the break, let's talk about how this can happen, how somebody can get to that level and still not have that remedial stall training. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. Talking about Colgan 3407, which crashed on approach to Buffalo Niagara International Airport about a year ago. It was on February 13th. 49 passengers and crew members died, and one person on the ground was fatally injured as well. And the FAA has now issued its call to action with the steps it believes are necessary to turn the situation around in the much criticized safety of the regional airlines. And they've included a lot of things in their purview, but not anything to do with primary training back in the GA world, where people learn how to recover from stalls. And Bob is calling them out on this. Bob, you have some insight into what happens when a pilot who may be deficient in these basic skills gets to the airlines. And it's your contention that all the training that the airlines provide overlooks these basics.
That's right. At the airline level, we're going through type ratings. We're teaching aircraft systems. We're teaching the unique characteristics, in this case, of the Bombardier Q400. I've talked to airline pilots throughout, including J.J. Greenway, the chief flight instructor for AOPA Air Safety Foundation. And he told me he has some 10,000 hours flying McDonnell Douglas and Boeing aircraft. And during those 10,000 hours, never once was he asked to demonstrate a stall recovery. It's not being taught at the regional level. It's not being checked at the airline level. The only place that we are really accountable for demonstrating the ability to recover from a stall is at the primary pilot training level and to some extent at the commercial training level. But again, when I surveyed pilots, I'm finding that one out of five have not ever been taught how to recover from a full stall. This is a glaring, it's a huge smoking hole in the level of primary pilot training that we're receiving. Now, some might say that the Colgan 3407 was an aberration. It was one in a million type of an accident. But in general aviation, we know that we have one a week. That's about 50 fatal stall accidents, stall-related accidents in the United States at the general aviation level. It's not being taught. It's not being tested to any great extent. And therein lies the problem. And what I'm surprised at is nobody is focusing an investigatory eye at the primary general aviation level. I don't know why this is happening.
I have to ask Bob to play devil's advocate here. If someone is at a regional airline and going through periodic simulator refresher training and being trained in the operation of a specific aircraft, it might not have made a difference. It sounds like they just weren't paying close attention.
Well, you know, Paul, if you grew up from childhood and you had a bad burn on a stove, you would be careful as an adult anytime you got around a stove for fear that you might be burned again. If you have not been burned on a stove, you might take somewhat of a cavalier attitude with regard to cooking. That's the purpose of stall training at the primary level, to instill what a stall feels like when an airplane suddenly stops flying. That is a scary, scary experience. And once you've experienced it once, you will become extremely sensitized to the risks of flying at slow, low airspeed close to the ground. Now, if the crew of 3407 had never experienced that, they're not going to be particularly concerned about an aircraft that levels off from a descent at a slow airspeed. They've never experienced what this feels like. Therefore, they're not wary. They're not concerned until it's too late.
What are you going to try to do from here? What is your point in taking this issue to task in Over the Airwaves this month?
I'll tell you, Paul, I have gone every which way I can directly with the FAA. I've notified my concerns with AOPA. The only thing left for me to do is to see if I can get some media attention so that we can get some outside examination of what we are doing at the primary pilot level. The fact that the FAA requires, they set a standard. It's a solid standard. They're not enforcing the standard. The designated pilot examiners are not testing to the standard. This is yet another aspect of FAA activity that's not being attended to. Now, I can sense the frustration of the NTSB when they make recommendations to the FAA to do certain things. We have year after year after year that nothing is being done. This is another item within the purview or the responsibility of the FAA. Here we have set a standard. We've provided them with evidence that the standard is not being adhered to. I don't know what more we can do other than wait for another type 3407 accident, and then the public outcry may simply demand that the FAA stand in and attend to this problem. It really is a serious, serious oversight, and it affects public safety, and as such, it's something that requires any kind of attention to get this corrected.
The Coalition of Airline Pilots Associations says that absent a constructive response from the FAA, it is up to Congress to legislate the necessary changes needed to ensure the safety of the traveling public. I may be kind of alone on this, but I hope it doesn't come to the point where we have to get guys like Chuck Schumer involved in telling us what to do as pilots.
Well, unfortunately, Chuck Schumer, you know, he's not a pilot. I'm not sure he fully understands the aerodynamic aspects of what we're talking about. You know, his and a lot of his colleagues, it's a knee-jerk response. This is a problem that requires systematic study. You know, Schumer would suggest that in order to be a first officer, we need 1,500 hours and an ATP certificate. You know, 1,500 hours and an ATP certificate without the proper training is useless. I would much rather have a 200-hour pilot in the right seat of an airliner that has had proper stall training, proper training all the way through, than a 1,500 ATP who slipped through the cracks and did nothing. Remember that pilot Renslow, Marvin Renslow, was an ATP. Mm-hmm. He had 1,500 hours, yet he was proved himself incapable to recognize the problem. So 1,500 hours in an ATP is not the solution. The solution is to go back to the primary pilot training level where this is supposed to be trained and enforce that the standard that the FAA has set forth, that it be in fact enforced.
Well, Bob, I know it's probably not going to happen this week, but it'll be interesting to watch where this debate goes, and I know that you will be a voice in it. We appreciate your thought-provoking commentary once again.
Thank you, Paul.
The February edition of Over the Airwaves may be out by the time you're hearing this. If not, it's imminent. You can find the latest edition and also the way to get on the mailing list to be alerted when new ones are released at www.overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.